Call to the meeting to order and welcome the commissioner who is going to start off DNR's presentation. We are doing the governor's recommendations for parks and trails and waters today, and that's because we probably have to do some decision making about the new money a little earlier than the rest of our budgeting. It's going to be particularly tricky because we're going to be having to think about the substitution issue as we do this. So one of the things we will ask for DNR to help us with that issue, and that will be one of the questions today, and the second question will be to get them to help us see the measurable outcomes that they might have with the new money, and hopefully the current spending as well. So with that, that's what we're going to do this morning, the Parks and Trails and Waters, and we're going to get through it this morning. Thursday, we are going to start on the bonding proposals. Everything has been scheduled. We don't have any money, but since people are talking about it and want us to make some decision on what basis, I don't know yet, but make some decision, we will hear all the bills. That means that for the bonding bill next year, they won't need to be heard again. We might do a little bit of review, but so we won't ask, we'll keep good notes, and we won't ask people to come back. We will have done our job, at least part of our job for next year. Does that make sense? Okay. With that, welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Mark Holson, Commissioner of the DNR. I just wanted to stop in this morning on the kickoff of the 10 and 11 budget presentations. You all are familiar with Assistant Commissioner Meyer, and I have confidence in his ability to answer your questions and get you the materials that you have needed and are going to be needing over the next several months. As you make, in my experience in government and around this the last nearly 20 years, some of the most dramatic and difficult decisions that this legislature has had to make, specifically around this budget. I don't envy the complexity of the problems and the scope of all the different issues you're trying to deal with. We also in the DNR understand that and recognize that as we are trying to deal with our piece of those budgetary problems. As we look out long term, what these immediate budget issues mean for us, but as we also look out to the needs of both the resources but also to the needs of the public and what their needs are and being able to access and make sure access those resources and have enjoyment of those resources but also ensure that we're protecting it. So it's not lost on us, and we're feeling some of those, we're feeling a lot of those pressures also. But I wanted to come in and say, but at the same time, there's a level of excitement inside the agency within your senior management team. I say that senior management team, that is your directors and their immediate teams below them, with them, and in those divisions. There's a level of excitement of the things and the opportunities that we're starting to see and the challenges that we're stepping out to try to take a hold of. Some of these have been long-term unanswered problems. Some of these have been problems that have just needed some new solutions put on the table. With the passage of the constitutional amendment and the SART accounts, the parks accounts, and the clean water accounts, creative juices inside the agency of being able to really rethink how to approach those, how to approach the public's needs, how to approach the resources' needs has dramatically changed. So in this budget, you are seeing two, as you are going to start today, two specific things, or two unique things. One is we've merged the Division of Parks and Trails, and you'll see that in your budget presentation. Now, when we made that announcement back in December, in talking with people, there was a little bit of nervousness inside the agency as we partook on doing that. Parks and Trails, very well established trails. Probably the most successful in terms of size, the most successful division in terms of the development of a trail system across the state. So a lot of inquiries as to why we would take that success and put it in with Park. Well, as immediately as I stepped outside the agency, most people didn't realize that they were two separate divisions, that they were, they were already combined. Being able to bring the power and the force of the success that we have at our 66 state parks and our recreational areas, and the magnitude of what they are, and if you've had a chance to go across our country and look across the country and look at our state parks in comparison, you'll find that ours are unique, they're grand, they're great. And now bringing the power of our trail systems, whether it's cross-country skiing, snowmobiling, ATVing, and bringing that power of that recreational interest together, we're going to be able to go out and bring a more intensive interest to the user, to the recreational user, with an outdoor natural resource recreation component in mind. The other piece that we talk about internally is using our parks and trails as gateways, using them as the gateway to bring the public in and be exposed to outdoor recreation. You've talked a lot, I'm sure, and over the last couple of years, we have been giving a lot internally, looking at the trends, looking at what the changes are in our society. We are using the demographics of our society and those changes. We are looking at the trends of how people are looking to recreate and the changes within that recreational trend to really bring about changes inside the agency, our focus inside the agency, and deliverables to the public and the state. The other one is the one that we just announced last Thursday, which is the combination. We are going to be combining, recreating a new division around water and ecological services, or resources, taking the science and the management of hydrology, how water moves off the land and through the land, and working it together with the science and the management of the ecology, bringing those two focuses together, and then applying them with a more focused attention into watershed management. Watershed management being the key, we think, to the success of clean water. But in doing so, we're able to bring the investments that we're making in fish and wildlife habitat development, which are in many cases the same areas, bringing those two ideas together in a watershed design, focusing within the watershed, the ability to work on clean water, work on fish and wildlife habitat together, prioritize with a more unified, a clear voice, both inside the agency and outside the agency, to private landowners, to local units of government. We just think this is a naturally evolutionary step that would have occurred over time. The reality is these budget realities are forcing us to move a little faster. So it's two things that are going on. There are two significant changes, combining four divisions into two, and we will be capturing some resources through that. But it is a terribly exciting time also inside the agency as we begin to manage through those changes. So with that, members, I'm going to leave and leave us the budget presentation to Bob Meyer and let you move forward.
Before you go, can you let me see if there are questions for you? You just joined people so early this morning.
Yeah, I'm tired too.
We probably will be visiting again with you when we have the new budget from the government.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. I thought it was important to have those opening remarks as we begin talking about the 10-11 governor's budget. Today, our focus is going to be on the Division of Parks and Trails and the Division of Waters. I believe we'll be coming back several meetings from now to begin the rest of the division, at which time we will be working probably off of the master spreadsheet that is still in being reviewed right now, but that will, I think, provide us a template to see what the numbers are, what the estimated spending for activities will be, and also the estimated general fund expenditures for those activities as well. So I'm looking forward to using that tool as we move forward. But today, we're going to focus on several of the outcomes and the change items associated with the Division of Parks and Trails and the Division of Waters. But we are going to talk about the Clean Water Legacy proposals in depth. Those proposals that we have are focused amongst the Division of Waters, the Division of Ecological Resources, and the Division of Fish and Wildlife. If we do need to get into that earlier, Madam Chair, we will work to schedule those opportunities as soon as possible, or we can maybe come back and just talk about our entire Kinoar Legacy proposal at some time sooner rather than later. So I apologize if that was something you were looking for today.
Yes, actually I was looking forward to that today. Perhaps it would be good for you to give us the written outcomes, measurable outcomes, and how you're going to measure them, and your evaluation. So give us great specifics for what you're going to be proposing to do with the new money. And if you could give it to us in writing, discuss it today. We'll see it in writing, and then if there are additional questions, we will. And I'm sure there will be. We will bring you back. But let's see it in writing first.
I will distribute our fact sheet to the session over this morning when I get back to my office. Then.
Yes. Representative Scalzi.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Myers, I don't see, and I've kind of flipped through this, and I understand it's early in the presentation, but we had asked for, and maybe you weren't here when we asked for it, a listing of how many people do what in Minnesota. For instance, how many people bicycle, how many hike, how many walk, so that we understand the use of the trails, how many snowmobiles. Do we have that, and are you going to be presenting that so that we can look at that as we do our budget?
Madam Chair, yes, we could talk about that in general today, and I apologize that wasn't in the detailed comments that we provided to the committee. I'll have to go back and see if we missed that question or if that information was not in that detailed packet that we did provide to the committee last week, I believe.
We have distributed that.
I will follow up on that, Madam Chair. So no more questions. We will begin talking about parks and trails. Some of this you've seen before, so I'm going to kind of gloss through it, and then we'll spend the bulk of the meeting talking about the change items and priorities. This outlines some of the critical trends, strategic objectives, and the priority outcomes that we're going to discuss today. You've seen what the system, the parks and trails system is made up of: 57 state parks, 7 rec areas, 8 waysides, 54 state forests, campgrounds, day use areas. We currently have 21 state trails encompassing 12,066 miles of trails, and also state forest campgrounds, and the system of water trails and recreational facilities. We can talk a little bit more about what actually is authorized as well in statute here in a few minutes. The population that we serve, 8 million annual state park visitors, 1.5 million Minnesotans visit a state park annually. That's 1 out of every 3. 10 of the state's top 35 tourist attractions are state parks. You can see on the trail side, water rec users, number one in the nation for number of boats, motorized recreation users, 250,000 snowmobilers, and 264,000 registered ATV owners in the state of Minnesota, and a huge population of non-motorized recreational users as well, bicycles, hikers, and cross-country skiers. And actually, Madam Chair, we could talk, if you want to spend a few seconds on the numbers that Representative Scalzi was asking for right now, if you're interested.
I think it would be nice for you just to give those numbers, but also provide them in writing.
Sure. Madam Chair, Cortland Nelson, Director of State Parks and Trails. Representative, we have 1.1 million non-motorized trail users. That number is not on your list there, and we will validate that. That is ascertained through on-site interviews, through surveys, and through other methods that are generally accepted in the industry for those counts. We have, as the graphic displays, 1.5 million Minnesotans who visit state parks. That rolls up into about 8 million total visitors. To give you a frame of reference, members, there are just short of 2 million people who go to a Twins game each year. There are about 1.3 million fishing licenses sold. So that gives you a sense of scale and scope for what these numbers mean for other recreational activities.
This map just depicts the location of these state parks throughout the state. You can see they're located in all 4 biomes of the state: prairie, deciduous forest, coniferous forest, in all parts of the state. And actually, as Representative Dill will tell you, he's probably blessed with more state parks than anyone in the state. So we do appreciate his support, his community support for our system. Talking about the trail system that we have, our trail system is constantly growing. There's huge, strong citizen support. The state trails that we have 2,500 miles that are authorized and 1,266 miles that are developed. With the, of that, 575 miles are paved surfaces. One of the challenges that we have is as we get acquisition dollars that are aligned with a specific corridor, is going through and actually making sure that that corridor comes to fruition and working through with those individual landowners often takes time, but we do the best we can to make sure that that trail exists in that corridor that was established. Water recreation, water trails that we have here throughout the state, you can see we have a large network. A lot of it is interconnected with other systems that are out there, but these routes are becoming more and more popular, and we're doing whatever we can to make sure that they are safe and accessible to all citizens. Trend in recreation participation changes. This is a slide we've discussed previously, but it really shows the recreation use by hour, by age class, and you can see it's up in the 35 to 44 category, but it's down in the population. Part of our population that is increasing in size as well, so we're trying to do what we can to capture that use and make sure that our systems are accessible to them.
Representative Packforth has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to back up a little bit, Commissioner Meyer, on the DNR Parks and Trail part piece where we're talking about the state mile trails. What kind of trails are those? I mean, can we break those down? Is that include some state snowmobile trails, state hiking trails? How do we break that down?
So, Madam Chair, Representative, we have 5,500 miles of trails under DNR's responsibilities. Those are state trails. 1,250 miles are state park trails. About that same number are state trails that have been developed. So that total is about 2,500. We have 2,000 miles of snowmobile trails, Representative, and we have another 1,000 miles plus or minus of state forest trails that we also maintain. So that rolls up to be about 5,500 miles.
If you could also give that to us in writing. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just another point of clarification. I think the first number that you said, that 1.1 million non-motorized trail users, is that the Minnesotans number?
Madam Chair, Representative, that represents the total number of individuals who are on that trail. The lion's share of those, the great majority, would be Minnesotans. There's always going to be some out-of-state visitors who end up on the North Shore and use the trail or are on the Gateway Trail when they're visiting the Twin Cities. But that in state parks side, Representative, I can tell you that 84% of our users are Minnesotans.
And
so if I could apply that ratio to the state trails, then you'd have somewhere around a million of those 1.1 million who are Minnesotans, and the rest are likely from out of state.
And just a quick, and that's where I was headed with, I know you have 1.5 million Minnesotans visit the state park, so I just curious. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, moving on. Last time we met with the Parks and Trails Division, we were asked the questions about research that we have, and this slide just depicts a summary of a large survey process that we undertook in 2007. This is a three-part body of research with five focus groups, a visitor survey, and a general population survey conducted in 2007. And what it's shown you is, what it's shown us, is that satisfaction ratings in the state parks visits are the highest they've been in 20 years since we've been measuring it. Young adults and families with children are visiting state parks less. Motivations and barriers to getting outdoors are similar for frequent and infrequent visitors. And that there's a strong association between childhood nature-based activities and visiting a state park as an adult. Some of the barriers that we did find were the lack of time, lack of information, lack of money, and lack of skills or equipment. So we've come up with some programs, and you're going to hear about some more of these that we're proposing in the future to help deal with these. Some of the successful negotiation strategies of what people look for when they're coming to a state park are the locations of our state parks, to where they live. Taking short trips are often preferred, especially by young families, than taking long trips. Having something to do when they get outdoors. Our geocaching programs have just been hugely successful. We're looking at other opportunities. One thing that we're going to be talking about in the policy bills is allowing people to fish for free within state parks if you're with a child. So to help that recruitment retention on the angling side, but also to give them something to do for free while they're there. And the other thing is they want to take part in things that are inexpensive or free. So that does tie into our fishing, the geocaching, other opportunities that we have. So we are taking a very active role and approach at how we deal with the findings of this research to help recruit, renew, and invigorate the youth in our state parks.
Courtman, I don't know if you have anything to add to that at all.
Madam Chair, we're going to just move ahead now into the overarching strategies, go through these really quickly. I know there's a couple key ones that the committee would like to talk about. So with this, I'm just going to turn it over to Courtman and let him talk about the strategies, and then when we get to the change items, I'll take over again.
Madam Chair, members, you saw this slide a couple of weeks ago, and this really lays out our overall opportunity to protect our resources and to draw out through an outdoor recreation activity Minnesotans and visitors who can enjoy our wonderful state park system. If you look at the next slide, that is the pie chart of our 8-9 budget, and it represents where those monies come from and the total dollars there for the biennium, $154 million plus. We have a number of special funds that are really related primarily to our trails activities in that natural resource account. Those are dedicated user dollars that go to various activities. That also in that natural resource fund, it includes $30 million from our day use activities, our fees that we receive for day use, our camping activities, and some other small accounts within that natural resource fund. Our overall strategies, there are six of them that are strategic objectives. And Madam Chair, you had asked at the last meeting that we address the long-range planning component, and I want to lay out where we are at with that so that as we move through these next slides that members can be formulating some questions and get an understanding of this time period that we're in right now. And really what I'm going to do is to take off from what the commissioner said. On the state parks unit side of our organization, I have shown you our strategic plan before. This runs to 2011. So we are in need of a new 5-biennium at least strategic plan. We have 2 more years to go. It has served us well. I'd be glad to go over this with any of you privately. But it is time to renew that. We also, as was mentioned earlier, we conducted social science research with the University of Minnesota, so we've got some fresh data about not only the barriers that our users have, but what are some of the values, what are some of the demographic information, always very timely to have when you're embarking on a new opportunity. We've created a state marketing plan for state parks that I'm going to be talking about in some a little bit of depth here in a few minutes. So we know where we want to go with regards to new users and retaining our current users and have some strategies related to that. What we don't have is that next 10-year plan, and particularly as we join forces with our brothers and sisters in the Trails and Waterways unit, we need to bundle these together to create a long-term plan and vision for this new organization. I think it's fair to say that the Trails and Waterways unit has tremendous challenges and goals out ahead of them, but how they're integrated with our state parks responsibilities, what are some of those community relationships that we can build upon, and how we take a fiscal approach to the use of the dollars that we have, whether it's general fund, the natural resource account, the voter initiative dollars that are coming our way, bonding, LCCMR monies, that has not all been put together into a package and a vision that I think you have asked for and that we need to. What I would ask members to think about would be to work with us on an opportunity to create that before we get into our bonding discussions next year. That would give us a year to create that vision that future plan. We have the Parks and Trails Council, we have community support, we have special interest groups. Madam Chair, there are three or four techniques and processes that we could use to get there, but I think my main point this morning is that we recognize that the time is propitious for a new structure to move this new organization ahead. We have individual goals and objectives in many categories, but they're not bundled together, and we will need some time to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Nelson, and Commissioner Meyer. In the Capital Investment Committee last week, we got a spreadsheet of all the bonding proposals that were authorized in 2008, and we saw that a number of those were still unobligated. And we had a discussion about that DNR is unique in terms of the other state agencies in that you cannot begin design until the projects are authorized. Could you maybe, because this relates into other projects, could you maybe describe that a little bit? Is that correct? And the history and why that is?
Madam Chair, Representative, excuse me, what you described is accurate. We have an opportunity to fix that, I would argue, with the dedicated funding, with some work on the bonding activities so that we can have those pre-designed dollars queued up so that these projects can move. What the representative is describing, folks, is when we get a bundle of dollars like we did last year in the bonding session, we do not have blueprints on the shelf that allow us to go ahead, and particularly the more complex and integrated the project is, we cannot proceed. For instance, with the dollars that we received, eliminating Lake Vermilion from that pile of dollars, we will have at the end of 2010 encumbered about $16 million of the $24 million that we're getting in bonding. The other eight are involved with MnDOT, a major partner. We've got to wait for dollars to get lined up and for procedures to go ahead. If we had had pre-design dollars on some of those projects, then we could have proceeded. I would state, speaking personally, that from a planning point of view, that is a flaw in the way we operate. And as we look down the road for sequences of capital development dollars coming forward, to have that pre-design construction flow would get to where I think everybody wants to get to a lot sooner, and has the opportunity to apply those dollars in a more efficient way, because it's, you lose some of the purchasing power each year those dollars sit, as we all know.
Madam Chair, and it's hard to be shovel ready and move quickly if you have to do the design. And I think one of the discussions we had last year was to try to get these projects in the ground, and they aren't able to. Is it correct you're the only agency? Other agencies do have the ability to move forward. Are you unique in your restrictions, or is that not correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, the State Parks and Trails Division within DNR is somewhere between 70% to 80% of all of the buildings, roads, water, sewer, power that exist in our organization. I'm not aware of the other divisions if we're talking hatcheries or administrative buildings. I would guess that they are in that same situation.
Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, to a certain degree we are. It comes back to the way the dollars are appropriated a little bit as well. I mean, we still have to work with the Department of Administration and go through all that and work with our sister agencies to make sure we're in line with their procedures and things. But it would be very helpful in the future as dollars are appropriated, maybe we can work with you to figure out what would be the appropriate pre-design pot of money that would be needed to help us keep a rolling stock of projects, if you will, ready to go, so when those acquisition or development dollars do come in, we can turn around and get that work done as soon as possible.
If I could, Representative Hanson and the bonding committee, Chair Hausman, asked what the barriers were and strongly suggested that we remove those barriers. So I think your question as to, obviously, the money barrier, do you have a pot of pre-designed money? And the second one, are there statutory barriers? So I think if you could get back to the committee with both of those, that would be helpful. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to build on what I learned last time. And last time you guys were here, you had it broken into parks and recreation and waters and trails and waterways. Has there been a combination, or was there a reason it was presented separately before with different strategic objectives, different budget breakouts than it's being presented today?
Madam Chair, Representative Hartman, yes. When we were here previously, we were talking about the 2008-2009 budget, which was before the combination of the two divisions had occurred. So now, through this, in this next budget, 10 and 11, it is the Parks and Trails Division, so they will have an integrated budget. And because of the way you're going to be seeing the budget language and our budget presented to you, they're combined as of this point. But to go back and talk about expenditures and the way the dollars were appropriated, we kept them separate for the last presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Meyer, when we're looking at what we did in 08-09 and comparing it to 10 and 11, will you be providing us with a spreadsheet that puts side by side the old program and the old line item and the new line item so that we can compare whether we're going up and down and by how much?
Madam Chair, Representative Orban, yeah, you will have a tool that you'll be able to compare the two budgets and separate, to tease them apart so you can get to that information.
Thank you.
Continue. This is our strategic objective, outdoor recreation. This makes up the bulk of the field work, if you will, for parks, trails, and waterways. This is the operation of the parks. This is the trails activities that go on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. Makes up the bulk of our budget. I think we reviewed last time some of our recent accomplishments. If we can go to the next slide. This is one of the outcomes of our University of Minnesota research. Pardon me. That, Madam Chair, is how we measure a very important factor, the satisfaction rate that we have from our park visitors. And you can see that we are well above that 90% rate. This has been a repeated piece of research over the last 24 years. It's been conducted 3 or 4 times, so we, as a longitudinal study, it represents an increasing level of satisfaction. However, as we have already acknowledged a couple of times, we know that we are missing certain target groups, our youth market, and our diverse camping opportunities that we have underutilized in many cases around the state. And finally, the program elements that will be talking about in a minute, the needs that people have to, when they're in a park, to have more activities, more experiences, to understand the values of nature. And we will be developing additional targets for these. As a general statement, we hope to increase our new visitation, that being new people to state parks, by 400,000 this coming year. 50,000 of those will be aimed at the youth market using technology and other devices and techniques that we have learned work quite well. We had 20,000 folks who were involved in our geocaching last year, and that was a good lesson for us to learn, and gives us reason to be very optimistic about that. The other 350,000 new visitors that we want to attract will come from our marketing efforts. We do have a marketing plan. We have done some in-house work on that, and I'm very pleased to announce to you that we will be have formed and signed a contract with Explore Minnesota for some state parks and trails focused advertising that they are going to be working with us on. You'll be hearing those ads in May and June, and then that begins the 2010 and 11 marketing activities that we will also have with Explore Minnesota. The next target is our natural and cultural resource management, and I know, Madam Chair, you and others are interested in talking about that. If I could have Ed Quinn join me at the table. He is our manager for all of our natural resource activities. This specifically focuses on our state park activities. We will be adding into those responsibilities the state trails and waterways, lands. So a year from now, we will have a new description of what we have done and where we want to go. But I think for the time being, this gives you a good feel of our responsibilities. You can see from the graphic there that we've got 225,000 acres that are within our state parks ownership and management. We have a number of measurements of that, and I'm going to ask Ed, if I can, to if he can go over this graphic while he's getting prepared. This lays out the statutory background and gives you a feel of the scale and scope of these resource management responsibilities, and I'm sure you're going to have some questions about that. So maybe, Ed, if I can get you to describe the overall targets and then what this pie chart represents, please.
Great. Thank you, Cortland. Madam Chair, Representative, for the record, Ed Quinn, Natural Resource Program Consultant for Division of Parks and Trails. Minnesota statutes direct state parks to preserve and perpetuate pre-settlement natural features. It also requires us to preserve and perpetuate other significant natural, scenic, scientific, and historic features that are in state parks, and reintroduce species that were formerly indigenous to the park area but are now missing. In 2000, there was a legislative audit done of state park management, and two of the findings of that report were that we had not emphasized resource management as much as our other two primary goals, recreation and interpretive services, and that more surveys and inventories were needed to determine how our resources should be best managed. And so one of the first things that we did in response to that audit finding was to initiate an effort to map all of the land cover within the state park system, and today we have completed 93% of that 225,000 acres that Director Nelson mentioned. Approximately 50% of the land in the state park system can be considered natural resource maintenance. It's in good quality. We need to do some prescribed burning. If it's a fire-dependent community, we may need to do a little bit of spot invasive control and some monitoring, but generally those lands are in good shape. About 25% of the land are natural communities that have been degraded by invasive species, infestations, overuse, erosion, things like that, and those are considered lands that need to be restored. 16% of our land we classify as reconstruction. Those are areas that are old fields, similar type lands that are no longer natural communities and need to be reconstructed back to the appropriate native plant community, whether that's prairie or forest or wetland. The remaining percentages, 3% of our state park lands are campgrounds, trails, use areas, things like that. And 8% is open water, rivers and lakes, and things of that nature. Our goal in state parks is to take all of those areas that are not developed or planned for development and restore or preserve those as high-quality native plant communities. Eventually, essentially for us, in looking at this graph, we want to move all of the land from the red or the yellow bars eventually to becoming green into that maintenance mode. That land cover mapping effort that I mentioned, when we analyzed that specifically for prairie, what we found was that 59% of our prairie acres or areas that should be prairie need to be reconstructed. About 4% of our existing prairie is degraded and needs to be restored, and about 37% of it is in areas that just need the maintenance. It needs the regular burning every 3 or 4 years, and spot invasive control and so forth. Our desired future condition for prairie across the whole state park system, when we get everything completed, is about 28,200 acres of high-quality, reconstructed, restored, or remnant prairie. For forest, about 17% needs to be reconstructed, 29% needs to be restored, and 54% is in that maintenance category where it just needs those things, prescribed fire, some spot invasive control, and so forth. Our desired future condition for forests in the state is eventually between about 125 and 130,000 acres of forest high quality in the state park system. The time frames that we have to accomplish this for prairie, for the reconstruction part, that red piece on the graph, it will require about 40 years at our current late.
How many?
It will take about 40 years at our current rate of 465 acres of prairie annually to complete the 16,700 acres of prairie that needs to be reconstructed. If we were to double that rate, we could accomplish that same objective in about 24 years. And for forests, our current effort is replanting about 286 acres a year. It would take us about 70 years to reconstruct the nearly 20,000 acres of forest that yet needs to be done. If we were to double that, we could accelerate it to approximately 35 years.
Representative Clark has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, those are pretty long timelines for a two-year term of representatives. I just wanted to think, what would it take? And are there stimulus dollars that could help us, you know, speed up that kind of investment? I mean, there's so many jobs that could be, it seems to me, and you probably have done an analysis, or have you done an analysis to what kind of jobs we might be able to create to, you know, let's take that 40 years and make it 10 or even 5. Let's take it 75 years and make it, you know, 10 or 20. I mean, have you done that kind of analysis to know what we would need? And my question does go back to, are there some federal stimulus dollars that are appropriate and available?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we have done some of the initial analysis on that. There is a point where we sort of can't go too fast because we have requirements related to obtaining local genotype seed and things like that that sometimes we get to a point where we could outstrip the availability to do that. But other than that, when we use or when we're actually doing this work, we use a combination of private contractors, we use state park staff, we use MCC crews, we use STS, we use some of our own resource crews. So there's a variety of pools of labor that can be tapped into to try and accomplish this. And
STS means?
Oh, I'm sorry, is Sentence Service Crew. And so, yes, we have done some of that analysis, and working with the resource specialists, particularly on the prairie side, we feel that about that 20 years is probably about as quick as we can do that 16,700 acres of prairie. We haven't done the same level of analysis on the forest side yet.
Okay, even 20 years is better than 75. I mean, it's a little more like we could actually get our hands on it. But did you answer the question about whether or not stimulus dollars might be available?
We are looking. There are stimulus dollars available on both sides. We looked at the some of the dollars coming through parks, and then we also have a proposal in to the LASART Council.
One of the things that I think we will discuss as a committee, I mean, I appreciate your 10-year plan. I think that's just right on to do another 10-year plan. But beyond that, perhaps we need to talk about having a 25-year more broad framework. And I think that's what Representative Clark is talking about. So I think that's a discussion for this committee and for you all to help us participate in that discussion. But if you would continue, I want to make sure we... Representative McNamara, if you start real quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Clark's point, have you done an analysis of what the private sector, what you're paying the private sector for your restoration work compared to what it costs to do it in-house? And then have you had availability problems with the seed types? And if so, what is that? How has that hampered your ability to restore prairie?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, yes, we have done an analysis. And as I mentioned, a lot of our reconstruction projects are a combination of both private work with contractors and park staff. If we were to
completely contract out the reconstruction work that we're doing now and meet the same level of diversity that we put on the ground, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 or so grass species and 25 to 40 wildflower species. That would run about $4,500 an acre, not including the site preparation. And our costs right now over a five-year period, so we estimate that it takes 5 years to completely get that acre of prairie established so that we can then move into a maintenance mode. And our cost to accomplish that is about $1,540. And then to your second point on the seed availability, it varies across the state. In certain areas, it is harder to get seed, and we continue to work with vendors to try and improve that. In other places, we have been able to generate enough reconstructed prairie on our lands that we're now harvesting that, and that's supplying most of our needs.
Two things. One, it's Mr. Quinn?
Yes.
Mr. Quinn, if I understood you right, did you say it costs three times as much to use the private sector as to do it yourself?
Based on the cost estimate that we did, yes.
Okay. Mr. Quinn, I would ask if you could make arrangements to meet with me and review that, because, Madam Chair, I find that, you know, tough for me to follow. I mean, one, $4,500 an acre is not realistic today, so I don't have any idea where you came up with that number, but it's completely out of line. Madam Chair, my other question would be, and I'm really encouraged to hear you say that you're using the Sentence to Serve and the other folks. Are you using them? I'm hopeful to do some of the more labor-intensive, tedious seed collection in our existing state parks where we have some good seed source. Are we utilizing that to the best extent? And I'm wondering if, along Representative Clark's question, this is where you should look at where we could have an immediate impact with some federal stimulus money to be doing some of that collection in the coming year, potentially putting people on the ground, because that's a real great source and it's very labor intensive.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we do use MCC extensively in our site preparation, where we're removing woody vegetation, seed collection, prescribed fire, invasive control. We use them a great deal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we're talking about the restoration and your statutory direction and pre-settlement natural features and natural historic features and reintroducing species that were formerly indigenous, to what extent or how do you bring in climate change adaptation? I know the University of Minnesota has hosted a couple-day conference on this, and I know there's increasing interest and belief that we need to be not just mitigating but adapting to climate change, and so I'm curious what the DNR is doing in that area.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, I was at that conference, and a number of ideas came out of that. One of the things specifically that was an outcome of that conference was looking at the likelihood of where wetlands will persist and become more important in the southwestern part of the state was one of those. And so in addition to doing things across the system, we also have focused some additional wetland restoration work. Just completed a large wetland restoration at Camden State Park, in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 acres of restored wetland. And so we're doing some things like that. We're also doing a lot of kind of the analysis type things to think about how we're going to adjust and adapt, thinking about corridors, connections between our lands and other public lands and things of that nature. Okay. Yes, and we're also working on some of the forests that are currently in decline and are not regenerating. We're looking at what's the appropriate replacement in those sites.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Just a quick question. The logging permits, the timber permits, do they pay for the replanting in the areas where the logging has occurred?
Madam Chair, Representative, we do a limited number of timber harvests in state parks. Typically, it's for things like removing old plantings that are not native. But one of the things that we did just recently at St. Croix State Park, you may recall this past summer we had a large wind event, blew down several hundred acres of timber at St. Croix. And it happened that we had just finished up a resource management plan and were looking to reconstruct Jack Pine Barren Savannah in an area where this windstorm took place. So it was very fortunate for us. We did set up a contract with a timber company to help us remove that down timber and some of the other woody vegetation to move us toward that Jack Pine Barrens restoration goal. And that money does come back to the department.
Thank you, Ed. Yeah, thank you. Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Meyer wants to move on to the change items.
Okay, well, we'll thank Mr. Quinn. He does very good work, and Minnesotans appreciate it.
Madam Chair, thank you. I thought that time was well spent on those activities. They are very important to the health and success in the future of all of our parks and natural systems. Just quickly before we move on to that, I want to just touch base on the stimulus dollars that everybody was talking about. In our analysis of what was passed and what's coming to the state of Minnesota, the DNR is eligible for very little of those stimulus dollars. Actually, the only dollars that we will be working for are dealing with wildfire dollars and some firefighting dollars that we'll be able to provide to local units of government and some pass-through dollars at that point in time. So it's unfortunate because there's a lot of work that we could do out there, but with the way the dollars are coming in and where they're being funded, the DNR is not going to be able to participate in spending a lot of those dollars.
Just a quick question. Some of the dollars that are coming through other agencies like DEA or some of those agencies, aren't there some ways that you could coordinate so we could get some of those dollars into your...
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, it's probably a little bit too early to tell, but we're doing whatever we can to be able to participate and to be eligible for those dollars. We are working with all the agencies, federal stimulus coordinators, on what's available and what we might be able to get and to provide for restorations, jobs, building asset preservation, energy efficiency throughout our building system. So it's right now, as we see it, there's not a lot of opportunity for the DNR to obtain any of those funding, but we are not giving up. I mean, it's the beginning of a pretty long, lengthy process to figure out how those dollars are going to be allocated.
Let me just suggest one connection is with the Green Jobs Task Force that's been working on this, and I think that might be a place to plug in.
Thank you.
I think we would like to hear some follow-up on those two particular questions that Representative Clark asked.
Madam Chair, I just want to move through these priorities really quickly before we talk about change items, as they are part. All the activities we've talked about thus far are part of the base activities within the Division of Parks and Trails. So resource conservation, outdoor enhancement participation, conservation education, this is something we talked about. We did provide detailed information in our response to the members about naturalists and the cost of naturalists in those positions.
Thank you.
Priority outcomes, you know, environmental services reach 1.8 million visitors annually. This is an important program that we have, and we need to continue that and update it, advance it. Trails and waterways operations and rehab, we talked a little bit about this, but again, maintaining what we have in the state trails, forest trails, public water accesses. Bridges are a big part of these trail systems, snowmobile bridges, bike bridges. That's infrastructure that does need to be replaced. We have a list, an outstanding list of infrastructure needs that we did provide the committee as well in our responses, talking about the needs of the trail system maintenance, rehab, and repair. The strategic objective 5, planning, acquisition, and development. We touched on this a little bit when we talked about the trails and establishment, but planning, acquiring, and developing, and renewing lands and facilities to meet the recreational, environmental, safety, and community needs for the whole system, trails, forest trails, access sites, shore fishing, safe harbors, water trails. It is a big part of everything that we do on a daily basis. And again, you can see this slide just talks about the number of accesses acquired or developed. We are meeting these goals and targets, but it does require funding and an ongoing commitment to making sure that we have the dollars and the programs we need to do what we need to do. Community assistance, local government assistance, or local grant and aid, I should say, sorry, Madam Chair, through the trail systems at the local level are just integral to the success of our system. Working with those local communities, the regional communities, providing funding, working with the federal government, providing trail grants, getting trail monies there, working with local communities on its establishment, creation of fishing piers, places for people to put their boats, their canoes, their kayaks in, and the grant and aid system in general. Without that system and the dedicated work of our local governments, we would not have the successful system that we have today. And this just shows those trail connections and transportation, the regional local trail connections program and the funding gap. I did send out, there was some discussion about our current local initiatives program. People should have received a copy of the history of that program, the funding gap kind of outlined through that program, where those dollars have gone, and we can talk about that.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, we have 360 grants that are in the hopper right now from various sources to give you a dimension that you can relate to. And to the graph that's up on the screen, a good healthy grant program should have 2-to-1, 3-to-1 competition. And as you can see, this the dollars available fall far short of even conservative number of applicants that we have there. Were this to be grown, and we have some desires along that line, this would meet a lot of local community needs.
Madam Chair, moving on to the change items, we have four change items for the Division of Parks and Trails. The first two focus on the dedicated funds. Water Rec Program talks about the appropriation on the Water Recreation Account, and Outdoors Minnesota is our comprehensive recruitment retention program we'll spend some time on. And you do have fact sheets in front of you, Madam Chair and members. They'll be on white paper with a blue logo on it. The titles will be, the first one we should talk about, it'll say, State Parks and Trails Invested in Our State Parks and Trails Legacy. This is dealing with the percentage of the parks dollars off of the newly established constitutional amendment funds. The governor's budget contains a proposal that would split those dollars 38% for the metropolitan area through the Met Council, 38% to the state park system, and then 24% for a statewide grant program that we'll talk about on the next slide. But with the 38% of the state park dollars, the major program elements include facility renewal and repair, visitor services and outreach, and resource protection. As we just discussed, the facility renewal and rehab is really looking at our system and creating the gateway for connecting people with Minnesota's great outdoors, upgrading our facilities in day and overnight use areas. These are non-bondable capital expenditures such as kiosks, tables, shelters, fire rings, trails and trailheads, and also enhance our energy efficiency in existing facilities, buildings, equipment, and operations. We'd like to go through and systematically upgrade approximately 4% of our campgrounds every year with these funds, putting in new fire rings, putting in new tables, redesigning them wherever possible. The system was made for a station wagon and a pop-up tent, kind of, and we're way beyond that, as we see right now, that there's campsites right next to each other. We'd like to be able to have more privatized, if you want to call it, campsites with some vegetation, some trees around them, so you don't see, you aren't looking right at your neighbor, so to speak. So that's a big part of this proposal.
We would look forward to having very specific, a great deal more specificity here with measurable outcomes, how you measure and how you evaluate, and then let us know why or why not this would be substituting for traditional funding.
Madam Chair, members, we will be glad to provide that. We'll be building on the presentation we gave you last January in the joint meeting with the Senate Finance on our five biennium capital development plan. This will also help us address a number of those issues there. I may add, because I'm proud of it, the pictures that you see on the graphic there, that's our first conversion off the grid. That's the contact station at Camden State Park near Marshall. And you can see that the wind turbine is being finished. It also has geothermal heat. We have six projects like that that are going on, including new facility at Grand Portage. So at another time, I can show you where we're at on that whole energy-related capital development component.
It would be helpful if you would give us currently the dollar amount you're spending on that and the dollar amount you are actually spending on solar.
Madam Chair, please ask you.
Currently spending.
Just to add to your request there, I'm just wondering if we could also find out, I was looking at this wind turbine, it's very small, and I'd like to know like what percentage it really is maybe taking care of the need there, and is there opportunities for the larger turbines to be used? I just don't know. It seems like that would be something we could gather some information.
Madam Chair, Representative, the quick answer is this is a 10 kilowatt device, and it's larger than one would have at a farm or at a small business. It allows us, it's large enough so that when we're not consuming the energy, it can go back into the grid. And so it's our first testing of that activity, and we'll have measurements of that. We also have at the kiosk, you can see there's some devices that actually measure the amount of energy that's being generated and whether that's going into the park system or back on the grid.
Madam Chair, to your point, if you turn the fact sheet over under key measures and outcomes, we do, I think, take a first stab at some of those questions that you're answering, but we will be fleshing this out more. You can see attract 100,000 new participants, provide educational programming to reach 25% of all state park visitors. I talked about the 4% of facilities, restore 111 acres. I'm not going to go through that, but we'll be adding to this contact and providing the information that you're looking for on that proposal. Just in summary, what the governor's budget has for the DNR of that 38%, it would be $6.536 million in FY10 and $13.64 million in FY11, Madam Chair. Moving on to the grant side of that proposal, as I talked about, it's a 24% statewide grants program that would support regional parks and trails to meet the needs of present and future generations through grants to local units of government. Similar to what we have with our local initiative grants program, this would contain some language. The governor's budget contains some amended language. It creates a new subdivision in 85.19, which is our local initiative grants program. These grants will be made for acquisition and development of regional parks and trails through an annual competitive grant application process. The local match would be required. They'd be made on a reimbursement basis, conform to state grant management policies, and will ensure that the state investments in regional parkland are protected in future generations. You do have a fact sheet in front of you on that, Madam Chair, as well. Rather than go into the specifics, I think I can just leave it at that for right now. We can provide you more context on that as you are desired, but our local initiative grants program is one that is well respected throughout the state. All of our stakeholders understand the process, that they appreciate the support that we give them, and a recognition of that was the pool grant dollars that the legislature appropriated last year. They asked the DNR to appropriate those dollars through that program because it is so highly respected and it runs fairly efficient, Madam Chair.
One of the reasons that I think it's important to understand, we're going to show measurable outcomes to Minnesotans to show that we're spending their money wisely. But as you develop this, it's important also to rank it. You don't have to rank it number one, two, three, four, but the highest, the medium, and the low. And the reason for that is we're not expecting as much money, at least I'm not expecting as much money to come into the fund, speak for myself on that, as the governor might have legitimately expected when this budget was done. The big economy is such that the sales tax is just not going to raise to those levels. So we have to be thinking, that's what we're going to have to be thinking about, and that's why another reason for the specificity.
Madam Chair, thank you. And just a note on that, the appropriations in the governor's budget are very conservative. They do not appropriate anywhere near what the estimated dollars would have been, or some people may think they are. It's probably about a half or less than what the balance may be in those accounts because of that point, Madam Chair. So we do understand your concern and appreciate it. Moving on to the water rec program, and again, you have a fact sheet on this one as well. What we're looking for here is an appropriation out of the water recreation account to keep pace with the public demand for water access facilities, public water access maintenance, shoreland restoration, and also a one-time appropriation to help us develop a downloadable GPS system off of our website with coordinates and interpretation of river level gauge information. If you want to go canoeing or kayaking, it's often good to know how fast the water is running, how high the water is, or if there is any water there to begin with. So this is the information that a person would be able to access off of our website. Specifically, we're looking to rehabilitation of existing public water access sites, $725,000. Of this, there will be shoreline demonstration sites, so we can show people when they come to put their boat in or participate how a shoreline should be managed for native species, how you can manage it for runoff to reduce that non-point source runoff from your sources, from impervious surfaces. The other part of it is going to be access maintenance, $575,000, to provide maintenance on our large lakes and river sites such as Mille Lacs, Red Lake, Lick of the Woods, Lake Superior, and the Mississippi River. Mississippi River will be our target areas. And then $100,000 for that GPS river gauge data project that I spoke of, Madam Chair. The next change item, and should bring up Forrest Bowe to help talk about this a little bit, is our Outdoors Minnesota program, Madam Chair. It's a recommended appropriation of $470,000 for each year, FY10 and FY11, across the different dedicated accounts to help us expand. One of the pieces is expand our outreach to the Hispanic community statewide, building off of the skills that we have learned and the successes we have learned through our Southeast Asian program and other programs that we have. We recognize this is a huge need, one we wish we would have started sooner, but we're taking it on right now and trying to accomplish what we can. Extend our skill building programs and strengthen our working relationships with schools. Madam Chair, I'd just like to have Mr. Bowe speak about this real briefly.
Madam Chair, committee members, again, Forrest Bowe, Deputy Director of the Parks and Trails Division. This particular initiative comes from four different accounts, $280,000 from the water rec account, $55,000 from the snowmobile account, $75,000 from the non-game account, and $60,000 from the parks account. Again, it's all about addressing the growing disconnect between people and the outdoors. So using a variety of approaches, reaching out to new communities or communities that we've traditionally been maybe underrepresented, making it easy and fun for people to get out, having some special events, and also a program around skill building as well. I guess in the matter of time, I would take questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you repeat where it's coming from again? Because that's not listed anywhere in the governor's budget or the stuff you handed out today.
Madam Chair, Representative Portman, it's $280,000 from the water recreation account, $55,000 from the dedicated snowmobile account, $75,000 from the non-game account, and $60,000 from the parks account.
And then just a follow-up, in the governor's budget, there's a section where the change items are supposed to be described in relationship to the base budget. So like the previous one was 17% above the base, but this one doesn't make any reference to what the existing base budget is or what type of percentage increase this represents. Or what kind to account for the decrease in those other, whatever you used to be using that money for.
Madam Chair, Representative Hortman, there is no base for this activity. This is a new initiative.
So this would be added on to the department's administrative base? Would that be the right reference point?
Madam Chair, Representative Hortman,
This is just, they're not, I don't believe, recommended as ongoing appropriations at this point in time. I need to go back and examine the way the budget bill is written, and I can get back to you on that specifically.
Representative Packard.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And in your budget book, under relationships to base budget, this was an addition of $470,000 to the department's base budget. What's ongoing?
Madam Chair, Representative Hackworth, as I said, I don't have that specific page in front of me, so if I need to examine that, and if it is ongoing, that's what we wanted to do. So,
okay, if we can get back to us on that and clarify, please.
Madam Chair, I didn't understand the original question. It is ongoing. It is an ongoing initiative. It's not a one-time initiative.
Okay. Representative Steele.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Director Boe, has MinUSA and ATVAM signed off on the taking the money out of those dedicated accounts? I mean, I'm looking at, well, I'll let you, that, why don't you answer that first, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Bill, we have not discussed it with ATVAM. We're not taking any out of their dedicated account. We had a discussion with MinUSA a couple of weeks ago at their winter rendezvous. They, at that point, neither supported or did not support the proposal.
Okay. I was searching to see if it was. I was asking the question if you were taking it out of there. All right. Thank you.
Representative
Clark. Just a quick question. Maybe this is outside the meeting, but can we get some details on whatever the outreach is to the Latino community? I'd like to know where and what and so on.
Certainly, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Portman. Just in relationship to the other change item, you talked about the $1.4 million to the Water Recreation Program. So is my understanding that that $1.4 million is from the money from the constitutional amendment going into the fund where we're taking $280,000 out for this initiative?
Madam Chair, Representative Portman, no, that would be incorrect. The Water Rec Initiative is from the Water Recreation Account as well. Just like
million.
This one.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, in summary, the governor's recommendation for the Division of Parks and Trails is $192.7 million. This does include the revenues from the dedicated accounts of the Parks and Trails fund dollars off the constitutional amendment. You can see general fund at 24%, natural resources fund at 46% roughly. Small amount of game of fish fund at $4.4 million. The Parks and Trails fund over the biennium is recommended at $32.9 million. Special revenue funds of $11.9 million and federal funding of $8.8
million. I think for at least the short term, viewing the legacy as coming in as part of the base budget, it's probably not the best way to go, and that we should be always seeing that as separate, because it will need to have a measure of accountability that I think is higher than we've had seen in the past.
And that's true. This slide does not represent base. I apologize if it presents that connotation. It's the overall budget for the biennium.
Fine. Thank you. I think we need to move on to water.
Yes. Madam Chair, members, in the interest of time, while Kent Lockesmore is coming down, I'm just going to start the presentation.
I have two questions before that. Representative Lilly and then Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we move on, I kind of want to back up to the bonding issues, and maybe you can help me. I was last year I was able to get a bonding project in and on the Gateway Trail, and I just kind of remember I was at a funeral and the governor was vetoing all sorts of stuff and he put his hand on my shoulder and he says, well, I'll make sure that's in there. So I'm just kind of curious, I think he's a man of his word, so I wonder what happened. Where's my bridge? And was that one of you guys that didn't get it done, or what happened?
One, Madam Chair, respectively, 1 second while I bring up the forest and just...
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, I believe this is one, and I will get back to you with more specifics, that is in the design phase. It's actually an at-grade crossing. It was $75,000, I believe, for an at-grade crossing. So trying to work with the local communities and make sure that that gets designed and done as soon as possible. I will provide you with an update on that as soon as I can.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Myers, as you can imagine, I was pretty excited because there was a lot of vetoes going around, and, you know, he specifically said it would be, you know, in there and done. So I'm a little shocked, you know. A lot of those bonding projects were intended to, you know, be done so that, you know, we always kind of talk about jobs, too. I mean, so we wanted them kind of done in a timely fashion. And I know you're familiar with it because you kind of live close to that area. But I think it was $750,000 or a little bit more than $75,000. But it would be nice to have a bridge up there. It's a really high-risk intersection.
And Madam Chair, Representative, that does represent the kind of quagmire that we're in. As we get those bonding dollars and they are available in the midst of a construction season and the sequence of bonding, of getting the bond dollars available to us, and then we need designing and we need to go through approvals, especially on something like that where it does cross a major intersection, try to figure out how to get that done. It often doesn't come that summer as soon as we get those dollars. It takes some time to get it into the queue, but it is one that we are working on. And that trail corridor in particular has undergone some significant realignment with Highway 36 and things like that. It is a priority for us to get it done, too, and I will provide you with an update as soon as I can.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Myers. I guess part of the reason we were pushing it is I really felt strongly there were some economies of scale or economies with the current road construction, and maybe you could use some of the dirt that was in one area and move it to the other and that sort of thing. But maybe for me and the other members, it'd be nice to have a list of these projects and then just a bit of, or that aren't completed, and just our friendly request for the future is it'd be nice if you talk to the members that have these projects and kind of give them an update of where it's at. No one's ever talked to me. No one's ever said, you know, what's going on, where we're at. I've kind of heard it around the rumor mill, and you've talked to the city a little, I think, or something. But it'd be nice to actually have us updated as well. So, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, going back real quick to page 15 of that, the bottom slide, water recreation. Just a point of inquiry on you were talking about shoreline restoration, and I haven't been on my county soil and water board, and we did shoreline restoration, and through that process. Do you all coordinate with SWCDs, Bowser, et cetera?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcell, wherever possible, we work together in conjunction. We would highlight certain different programs that they may have or techniques that they have if they are applicable. We do work with the local units of government, making sure that they understand what we're doing and how it all fits together.
I'm just curious if we can really maximize that in the best interest of our budget. So, appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Earlier, you were asked questions from members regarding the economic recovery designed to stimulate the state's economy. You were asked questions about bonding. You're now being asked questions about specific projects. I must say, Commissioner, I was stunned by your lack of vigor and lack of grasp of the job hemorrhage situation that we're confronted with in Minnesota. And every agency needs to put forth proposals and projects that are job ready, that will put people back to work regardless of your slice of the overall administration. Certainly, communication with other agencies that have more direct control and authority over economic recovery dollars, contact should be made so that projects that are job ready are part of how this state manages those economic recovery dollars. Lastly, On Thursday, this committee is going to hear 12 bills dealing with projects, most of which I assume have been around for more than a year, and one would assume are job ready to put people to work. So I certainly don't want to get preachy here, but we're all feeling the pressure on this side, and we would hope that the administration would pursue some of this with a little more aggressiveness and vigor, or we're going to be right back here next year in the same mess we're in now.
I think those are good words to take to heart, and perhaps at the beginning of the next meeting, you can give us a short update on what you have found about those, particularly those speed dollars or other dollars that are coming to us. Is that all right?
Madam Chair, that is an excellent point, and I do apologize if I came across that way, Representative Angelos, because that is not the case at all. We're doing everything we can to make sure the projects we have, the funding we have, is ready to be spent and provide jobs, especially in your district where we have huge impacts from forestry-related infrastructure and the lack thereof. It's a huge issue for us, and trying to do everything we can to change our operating procedures to meet the needs of the mills, to meet the needs of the constituents, is a huge project we're undertaking right now, an accelerated project on a timeline that's probably unprecedented before. So I look forward to talking to you about those activities as well, but we will spend some time in detail talking about our involvement with the stimulus package, Madam Chair.
Particularly looking at sources of dollars coming in that are not tagged DNR, but are tagged jobs. Am I getting at it right, members? Okay. If you could do a few minutes on the waters, these issues are always much more involving, and we'd love to have more time, and we cannot go tonight because there are the community meetings are going on tonight, but I know that this committee is a workaholic committee, and we will be meeting probably at night next week.
Madam Chair, in the interest of time, the base budget 0809 we talked about previously, and I'm going to get us right to the change items here really quick.
That's a good idea.
Division of Water serves, you know, the whole state, local units of government, and the counties. Water is a huge, valuable resource for all of us. You've seen the strategic objectives and spent a lot of time on that, public waters protection, flood hazard mitigation. The change items specifically to the Division of Waters focus on $640,000 general fund reduction. $65,000 of that would be a reduction to the grant to the Mississippi Headwaters Joint Powers Board, and a $5,000 reduction in the Leech Lake Fan State Grant. That would actually eliminate that program. These are local governments that we have been fully funding the review of local land use decisions in the past. The Red River Mediation Agreement, we're recommending to reduce that agreement down to pre-2008 levels, reduce that by $70,000. It would still be at $210,000 general fund per year, and also eliminate what turned out to be an ongoing appropriation for our shoreland rulemaking activities. This will not impact the implementation of these rules. We're still planning on having a draft rule completed by the end of this fiscal year, and then going through the formal rulemaking process, which, because of the ALJ process and contested case hearings that we're anticipating, will probably take some time to get through.
As we look for new monies, this rulemaking is particularly important, so we need to discuss this a bit more. If you go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Can I just ask a question? You say you're reducing the governor? Plenty is proposing to reduce the funding to the Leech Lake issue up there?
Madam Chair, it's a $5,000 grant that was appropriated throughout the history of the base budget general fund, and Director Loxmo can talk more specifically about that.
Madam Chair, Kent Loxmo, Director of Division of Waters. The Mississippi Headwaters Board and the Leech Lake Band both do some review of local zoning decisions in the upper Mississippi Headwaters area. So they make the decisions locally, but then this joint powers group does a review of all of those local zoning decisions. So what this money has done, it's been a grant to those two entities, $65,000 to the Headwaters Board and $5,000 to the Leech Lake Band, to help support their joint powers agreement
basically their meeting for review of local decisions. The local decisions are still going to occur, and if they continue with the Headwaters Board, it would be just funded totally by local funds.
Just a comment. You know, with all the incredible cleanup necessities that are up there that have been neglected for so long, I just, any amount of reduction just seems so unwise. I just don't understand it. And maybe I guess so. It's astounding. But even though it's apparently a small amount.
Madam Chair, the other change item related to the Division of Water, and I do have the clean water fact sheet that we'll be handing out, actually we can hand out right now to members to look at, we can discuss more next time we meet, is a change in the water permit application cost. Last biennium, the legislature allowed us the ability to directly recover costs for environmental review, permitting, field inspections, and monitoring of large water use projects. This is a one-time appropriation. We would like to make this process permanent in statute. So it's a small fiscal impact, but it does allow us the ability to continue that program on into the future. And you do have a fact sheet on that in front of you. And then the clean water legacy items that we talked about in general, the Division of Waters does have a few of those, and Madam Chair, I don't know if you'd like me to go through this rather briefly or see if we have some questions or...
I think we need specificity, and so why don't you give us that later?
Okay. Well, we will. I would like to talk about the Clean Water Legacy Funding as the package that we do have, and Madam Chair, it might be wise as we talk about clean water funding to discuss it with the PCA, DNR, Board of Water, Soil Resources, and Department of Agriculture, is that those are the executive branch agencies that sat down in compilation of the whole governor's package and just have an understanding of how it all fits together. Our work is integrally involved with the TMDL process at the PCA. The Bowser dollars also fit in, and the Department of Ag appropriation as well. It's something to think about. We can talk about that further in detail.
Well, it's the detail that we're lacking right now. I mean, it gives these general things, but not the specificity that I think people are going to want to see. Represent yourself.
Madam Chair, I see we're running out of time, so I think I'll defer till we're going to take this up again at this point. Okay.
So the water's budget is taking a cut from the governor's recommendation. I'm not sure I see where all the cuts are coming from. You're going from $35 million to $33 million, yet expecting clean water money?
$33.5 million is a 10-11 recommended budget, Madam Chair, with $3.8 million of that recommended coming from the Clean Water Fund.
Well, you need to give us some reason that is... Not the new monies are not used to supplant or substitute for current expenditures. That's not obvious.
Madam Chair, the simple answer to that is, as clean water dollars were appropriated beginning in 07, it's always been a one-time funding. Actually, one-time funding began on a year cycle, and then last biennium it was one-time funding for the biennium. It's our position that there was never any base appropriated to that. And it is a big issue that the legislature and you folks are going to have to try to come up with some guidance on, because there is no general fund dollars for clean water activities in the governor's budget besides the clean water fund dollars that are there.
That the Constitution uses a different term, and that's traditional. And just because you do one time and one time and one time doesn't mean that it is not traditional. If that's our tradition, that's our tradition. So I think we have some issues that we have to deal with. So, but we have reached the end of our time. I want to remind members to save the water materials, because we are going to be revisiting this issue. We just have more to do in this legislature than we've had to do in the past, and that's just the way it is. Representative,
shall we just move the minutes to February 19th? Madam Chair, move the minutes to February 19th,
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? That's your adopted. Thank you all. Meeting is adjourned.